Shalom, everyone. Welcome to the third session with Maitreya for this Feast of Tabernacles. Glad to see everyone here. This is the last session for this feast. So before we get started, let's all take a second to close our eyes and become more meditative and still, and put our egos and preconceptions aside and be open and prepared to receive the answers Maitreya gives to our questions. Shalom. We have the great honor and blessing of having Maitreya himself, God is with him, in the room. Other names and titles given to him include the Christ, the Kalki Avatar, the Mehdi, He Whom God Shall Make Manifest, the Blue Kachina, the Seventh Angel, and others. He is the representative of God, the formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal, fine, on earth, come to reveal the mystery of God, unify the religions of the world and humanity, and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, as has been prophesied. The Father and Him are one, and He knows the Mother. He will be available for the next hour and a half from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time to answer questions on all aspects of his teachings. And we, as with the other sessions, we ask people to send in their questions beforehand, and those questions would be answered before other questions. And we received quite a few questions. So we will be taking no questions from the room in this session. There are more than enough questions pre-sent in for the full time for Maitreya to answer. However, I think everyone should keep in mind that this is a public forum, and whatever you do say or type is in public domain. We do record these sessions and may broadcast them later or use them as we see fit. And so the microphone is now released to Maitreya. Please give him your respect and undivided attention as he answers these questions. All thanks to God and to his prophet, Shalom.
Shalom, everyone. Welcome to this session. Let us start in the name of the Most High, the Compassionate, the Merciful, who has sent all the prophets and the truth, and expect human to read them, to understand them, and follow them. Thanks, God. And we have a lot of questions from Ben. His name here in this room is Panpi Sich, I guess. So we can read it here ourselves, and if there's an explanation is needed, I'd probably ask Panpi Sich, whatever that means. You want to take the Mike can say what your name exactly is, and if you want to read it or you want to somebody else read your questions. Go ahead. Okay, then, if we go to the next step, yeah, great. Okay, so go ahead and read the first question. We have 21 of them, so it's going to be a session probably with answering them. We're not going to probably ask anybody answer. I'm going to just go ahead and discuss them for next hour and a half. Go ahead, Ma. You can read the first question.
The first question, has Maitreya given any prophecy about how he will be able to recognize his second and third incarnations? Will it be a similar situation to what happened with Bob and Baha'u'llah? Or will Maitreya need to die before a second incarnation can be born?
Apparently, the reference to the Baha'i way of passing the scepter or the teaching to other person is referring to the way of Baha'i belief that anytime a leader passes away, the spirit moves from him to the next leader in their organization. And that is why the idea of a guardian was to have that spirit continue in the organization forever. And of course, there is no guardian anymore, and as Abdu'l-Bahá himself clearly said, that organization without guardian is no longer valid. But in this case, of course, we have made it clear that it is the reincarnation of this soul that will come back to claim the position of Maitreya for 3 reincarnations at least, to continue this revelation to its ultimate fruition, which is the kingdom of God on earth for the next 1,000 years. God does not choose the prophets just by going from one prophet to others, although he can do that, but he prophesies of coming of that prophet, and God promised David that he will be king forever. If we do not believe in incarnation, reincarnation, how can he be king forever? Because he died in one lifetime, but that is truth. If he comes in each incarnation and take that position that God promised him, therefore the way it's done in the mission is that I have to leave my body and return in new incarnation. And there is a essay and writing which is called Passing the Scepter. It's in the supplements in Though, and it explains how it's done. It's very much similar to the way they find the leaders of the Tibetan Dalai Lama, for example. It is a group of the people that know me very well, and they will be looking for my next incarnation, and since they know me well, they can recognize me in the next incarnation, and by some testing will find me probably and know exactly that's me, that I have returned. And meanwhile, we will have a body of 12 people who will conduct and continue the mission, but their most important task is to find me and re-establish the mission with one focus, one leader, and the continuation of unification of this organization by being focused on one center instead of many. If you have been in lecture that Noor gave, we see that every other religion to this point, after the founder left, there have been an upheaval and great separation between the people, and those religions became branched out to many religions. None of the founder of any other religion to this point have given such a specific instruction of how not to let this happen to this mission. Therefore, God is indeed protective of this mission, and hopefully this will not happen to us. I hope that answered your question. If it did, we can go to the second question. I'm going pretty fast. I'm not going to go very deep because the people calculated and we have around probably 4 minutes for each question to be answered. We have only 1 hour. It's 90 minutes and the whole time. And therefore, we're going to go pretty fast through all of them, hopefully. Go ahead, Ma.
Second question. What is the mission's teaching on divination methods such as the Chinese I Ching, Book of Changes, Tarot, runes, etc.? Are divination manuals valid ways to know God's will, receive His guidance? The Bible seems conflicted on this. In Leviticus 19:26, God commands, "Do not practice divination or sorcery." But in Genesis 30:27, Laban says to Jacob, "I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." Does God give guidance to individuals through divination?
Actually, if you search for the divination in King James Version, Genesis 30:27 does not come up as such. It says, by experience that Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. So it uses experience instead of innovation. So that shows that God indeed is not supporting divination. And in that verse, Genesis 30:27, it doesn't use the divination but experience. So God is constant in His opposition of using any other method but trusting on God, and by following His laws and His will and being satisfied with whatever He gives you, you are any better off than trying to manipulate the nature in order to satisfy the lower nature. Therefore, the answer is He never supported anywhere in the Bible that we can use any other way but seeking His blessing and grace for receiving whatever God sees fit for your life. Even other translation, they use the experience as divination. That is incorrect translation. That's why we recommend using King James, not any other translation. It seems the more they translate the Bible, the more they use words that originally was not used, although the King James itself might have been tampered with some, but sound like they really put extra effort to make it more or closer to the original teaching. So that's why we recommend always use the King James Version. The answer is God still is opposed to that method. Okay, if you have any question or you have a follow-up, go ahead. We go We always can discuss that. Divination is not part of the mystical path. No, it's not. Mystical path is to know thyself, to know God. It has nothing to do with the, you know, incantation, divination, or any other method that you put God out and you try to think by doing those things you can manipulate the nature to gain whatever you need, just like tarot or runes or whatever, you know, you have listed in that question. They're all manipulating nature, not progressing, not becoming godly, not listening to God, but trying to gain things with force. God is against it. And mystical path is also against it. Do you have a mic? You can take the mic and speak with me. That's much easier because I'm not reading the writing on the room much. So the answer to your question is no, it's not mystical path. Mystical path is different completely. And we do not condone, you know, that kind of a rituals. Actually, that was one of the reasons God destroyed man 12,000 years ago and closed the third eye, because they also were able to manipulate the spirit and reach the point they could have extracted the life force and continue to live for hundreds of years. And that's not the reason for this creation. For this reason for this creation is to become divine, to become one with God, return home. All those things are a part of Maya. Okay, do you have any follow-up? If not, we go next question.
Question 3. What is the reason for God's prohibition against mystical paths in the Bible?
Who said God is against mystical path? I do not understand that question at all, because that's not a part of our teaching whatsoever. Actually, if you remember in the teaching, we refer that when God chose Saul, he told him that he will meet a group of prophets, that they sing and dance and chant with the pipe and music, and they were the mystical people. Or many prophets of God spend time alone by themselves in order to receive the revelation, including me. So I don't understand why you concluded that God is against the mystical path. Can you explain how we came to this conclusion? Ah, okay. All right. Can you take the mic, Pam? Okay, I wish you had told me that, because it's very hard for me to answer a question and read what you write in the room. Okay, well, go that way. That's okay. All right, well, no, it's not. Divination is not a part of the mystical path, and God is not against the mystical path whatsoever. In fact, mystical path is a part of the seven seals. How can he be against something that he already said, I will reveal to humanity? Therefore, the answer is, he's not against the mystical path. Go ahead, let's go to the next question.
There is very little mention in Taoism in the mission, although the yin-yang symbol in the greatest sign is Taoist in origin. Were Lao Tzu and Shang Tzu avatars or prophets?
I personally was introduced to the mystical path through the Ananda Marga, and Ananda Marga is teaching about the consciousness and the three gunas and explain how they are the consciousness and creative forces. And therefore, it made sense to me and it gave me the experience to realize them in a deeper level and see them and eventually recognize them as the truth. I was not introduced through Taoism or other discipline that you mentioned. In general, I found out many things that have come from China are a philosophy more than a religion. They might have some truth in them. They're not completely void of the truth, but the mystical path and the scriptures that Hindus and Hinduism have come from seems to be a part of original teaching that spread all over the earth and became the very base of the mystical experience of all culture and religions. And therefore it seems the Hinduism and the teaching about the consciousness and three gunas have a greater truth than any other philosophy or teachings from any other mystical path. And since I was introduced to it that way, and it made sense to me and became the part of revelation, I have to say that is more truth than any other philosophy. But I'm not completely throwing out the Taoism or other philosophy. They might have some truth in them. The best way is study them, compare them, meditate on them, and eventually to come to the conclusion which one is the best or have any truth in them or not. That is the scientific way of looking at them and maybe even eventually conclude if there is, they have some truth or not. So we in the mission emphasize on the Hindus' understanding of the consciousness and trigunas and the way it's explained in that religion. Okay. Taoism teach I'll try to read your writing then. Taoism teach meditation. Well, a lot of people teach meditation, so you can probably bring Taoism as a part of the mystical path, as Sufism is, as Kabbalah is, as other teachings that we call mystical paths are, which is to know thyself. Maybe Taoism does help a person to know themselves. If it does, then it's included in mystical path, but the rest of them can be a philosophy and teaching and also have some truth in them. Then you say, you know, Taoists also teach divination. Okay, now you are saying something that God said don't do it. So, it might have some truth, but there are parts that they are not the truth. And divination is almost used in many, many religions and the people. We are talking about the truth of the religion or the followers. That's the two different things. Yeah. There might be some Jewish people that they follow divination and therefore God said don't do it, but they still are doing it. There might be some Muslim doing it. There might be some other people doing it. But that doesn't mean that is correct. Well, is there any place in the Bible says you can make it godly by praying to God and say, oh, maybe this time, but that's what you say right now. Does it sound like rationalizing a command of God so you can feel good about something he said, don't do it? So I don't think so. If he said, don't do it, so don't do it. Okay, go ahead with the next question.
Do the eight signs of the Taoist Bagua represent eight existing primal forces in the universe? For example, mountain, lake, fire, water, wind, wood, thunder, earth, heaven. Do these eight forces have anything to do with the eight petals of the Lotistica in the seal of pure consciousness?
Again, those things are in Taoism, and there seems to be some understanding from some people that they followed that path, and therefore they concluded those things. We also can look at the Chinese medicine. You know, they believe in yin and yang, and they believe in many ways that affect your health. Are you having too much water on your body, or too much heat, or too much other things? And they teach you they have to have a balance between all of them, and you have to work to bring the healthy body by following those things. So, how much truth are in those teachings? Again, it has to be studied, it has to be followed, it has to be looked into to see how much of them are the truth and how much of them are not. So, Taoism, again, seems to me is a philosophy. It's not really a revelation from God, and therefore those philosophy has to be proven have truth in them. Hinduism, the consciousness and trigunas already been proven to be true and make sense, and therefore we accept them and leave those the rest of the teaching in other philosophies to be proven to be correct. Therefore, again, that's another part of our teaching, but we teach the first seal. If, again, you have some follow-up, go ahead. You said God, you thought God's prohibition for deviation was temporary. Why? Because we had misused our spiritual power, so we was trying to keep our third eye closed. Yeah, the reason he closed our third eye because we misused it. We used them to extract life force or use it for our selfish purpose. And deviation is a very selfish way to try to manipulate the nature for our selfish desires. The whole idea is not having a desire, but desire to return home. Why do you use the deviation? Divination. You use to gain something. Yes, he had it closed for 12,000 years, so the history will become a lesson for humanity, and when this revelation comes, human understands that they should not use divination and tarot and the things that selfish ways as they did 12,000 years ago. And he's not going to open the third eye until human learns these things and realizes that 12,000 years of the history is a lesson for humanity not to misuse their powers. I thought, you know about our teaching more than this. Seems like you really don't know about your teaching much. That's why I thought, you know, your question is, as you said, you have searched the website and these questions, you didn't find them in website. If you read our teaching, it clearly says the last 12,000 years has been a lesson for humanity to learn not to misuse their power, not to be selfish. Listen to God 100%. Put their life based on God's will. Come together, help each other. Therefore, their physiological and safety need is being taken care of. They don't have to worry about those things. They can meditate and progress in a spirit and become one with God. That's the only path is recommended by God, a selfless path, a godly path, a humble path that we listen to God, not a selfish path. So, that is the base of our teachings. Do you want to answer the rest of your question too? Or you had enough? Alright then, let's go to the next one. We started it, let's finish it.
Does the mission of Maitreya believe that Hindu, Vedic, mystical philosophy with its seven chakras, three gunas, etc., has more truth than other mystical paths such as Taoism, with its three dantians, eight forces, 64 hexagrams, etc.?
Hinduism, as we explained, it has a greater truth, and we have experienced it. We believe that, yes, it does. Go ahead. Let's go to the next question.
Question 7. Was there ever a time in the history of the universe when the goal of life was to individuate and create separate egos that felt separation from God? Was this ever God's will at the beginning? Did God ever send prophets to teach unit consciousnesses to individuate and separate themselves from their God awareness in order to become more focused on the physical world?
Can anybody answer that? That's a simple one. Yep, the answer is a very resounding no. Because the whole, if you remember, Bible starts with the notion that there was a darkness and God moved to see what is that darkness. He had never felt that darkness in his body, and he decided that's not good. It's just like a sickness or something in the body of God. And he sent his spirit into that darkness, and the spirit went through the eternal divine path and eventually reached the light. And therefore, if God wasn't very happy such a thing has happened in the body. The separation was something God did not like at all. I did not want to see it happen. And therefore, from the very beginning, it was an anomaly that be individual, be separated from the rest, be egoistical, be disconnected, and it still is. And that is what we are trying to convey to humanity and let them know that individuality is not the goal, but collectivity under the umbrella of the eternal divine path is the goal. And that is how you overcome the separation from God and others by foregoing your own individuality into the collectivity, and collectivity is greater and have more power than each individual separated themselves, and humanity is still fighting that, and that's why they have a problem. They're still having separation between them. Okay, he says, but God likes to see us play the play. Who said it is a play? Even when we reach pure consciousness, you have said that God does not want us to merge back onto him, but to remain in pure consciousness as separate beings. First of all, I don't teach it's a play. Actually, we say it's very serious business. The reason the whole thing is created, because there was darkness and the whole creation is created, so return that darkness back to God. Being a play is a Hindu misinterpretation of their base or original teachings. And it never meant for the creation to be looked at as being a play, and it's not. And that's why does God send all religion and prophets to guide humanity? Why does he want to write the Bible and the scriptures to guide human back to Godhead? He would have let it just, everybody plays the play according to what they want to play and the way they want to play, make it a sport. It's not even a sport. It's very serious business, and we are here to grow and go back to God. So it's not a sport, it's not a play, but it is something that humans will recognize and realize, and they eventually will, because this is the last revelation. And again, you have to read our teaching more deeply, Ben. It is the teaching that is different than Hinduism. Also, we include Hinduism. That doesn't mean we accept everything is in Hinduism. If we had, we would become a Hindu. We don't accept Judaism, but that we don't accept everything in Judaism. If we had, we would become a Jew. Same thing for Christianity or Islam. You know, we accept a lot of things in Islam, but we don't accept everything. Otherwise, I would have stayed a Muslim. So, why have you said that it is against God's will for us to merge back to him? We're just saying it is not against God's will. Actually, that makes it very serious that God wants us to help each other and come back and help other people to understand that we have to realize these teachings, not to look at it as a game, not look at it as sports, a serious business. We are here to help each other, to accelerate, to create the community of light, and accelerate the progress of everyone to go back to. But when we reach to God by ourselves, God is not going to let us stay there. He has put us out of his mouth because he wants us to come back and help other people. You have said that reaching pure consciousness and being with God is distinct from merging with him. It's distinct. Distinct. Different thing. Okay. Different thing. No, I didn't say that. I said, when you reach pure consciousness selfishly, God is going to send you out, send you back. That's different than he doesn't want you to go back. No, he wants you to go back, but you can't go back until everybody has gone back. That is what we teach. It seems a lot of misunderstanding there, Ben, in understanding the teaching. The teaching is completely different. Teaching is to make human to realize it's a serious business. Everybody is responsible to recognize their life and creation is a gift and is a very rare gift for each of you or everybody to be here and help each other to carry the comings of light, overcome our selfishness and self-centeredness, and create a community of light that we can live together and help each other and accelerate the progress of everyone to reach pure consciousness. And if you even reach the pure consciousness, God is not going to let you stay. He's going to say, no, go back. Go back to help other people. If you cannot help other people, then you have to look at yourself pretty strongly and follow the eternally blind path. Okay. Let's go for the next question.
Will sannyasins have full voting rights to select leaders in the kingdom of heaven on earth, or only married people? Will sannyasins be allowed to become political leaders like married people can?
But basically, sannyasin is a decision they can make to participate in the process of selection or not. But in general, it is preferable for them to concentrate on God and greater thing and not get involved too much with the politics and things that are not affecting them. But if there is a situation that it affects them, of course, they should have representation in those area. But in general, they should concentrate more on higher thing and helping the community and become an advisor and be people that are godly than involve themselves to the worldly thing too much. But if there is something that it affects them, yes, they can participate. Okay, let's go to next.
Are sannyasins allowed to get married later in life if they find a partner?
Absolutely. If they want to become married people, that's fine. If they're married people, they will become sannyasin, that's fine. It's just something that has to be very flexible for everyone to see where they're at. You know, but if you decide to be sannyasin, it is, again, preferable that you do not waver and change your mind too much. The whole idea is that sannyasins have more time and energy and dedicate their life to God and married with God. And therefore, they should not really look into marriage. But of course, if they can't work it out without being married and eventually they decide they're not made for sannyasin life, of course, you know, they always can back off and say, well, I'm not really made for this, and I'm going to go and get married. The whole idea is that we give enough opportunity or create enough opportunity for every person that they eventually see why they have been created and why they are here, and then choose the path wisely themselves with the help of the elders, and therefore they can have a happy life and know that what they have chosen is from God for them, and therefore they can follow it. But if they realize, no, they made a mistake, they always can change their mind. But the communities of light should be based on the ability of each individual to create keen understanding, to choose what God create them for. That's why we believe the ability to have a physical body, you know, improving your physical body, your mental ability, your wisdom, and eventually decide wisely. Therefore, you never back up, but there always is a possibility you might change your mind. Okay, next question.
Why did God command that we not wear clothing woven of two different kinds of materials? Leviticus 19:19.
Well, probably there was some reason in that time that he sent that command to the children of Abraham, children of Israel. As we will see in other questions you have, you know, there was some reasons in that time that he commanded these commandments. And probably there was a ritual there in that time that the pagans were using that as a magical thing to do. For example, there are a tradition that if you put or sew 40 pieces of cloth together and you had a wish, it's going to come through. God said, don't do it. So it could be that sewing those two materials together had a magical belief. Yes, a wish that it's going to come true. Exactly. So that's what God said, don't do that. Trust on me. Don't trust in this traditional. God is not very happy or interested in traditions and opinions and ideas, but he is interested in his will to be done. Okay? So that's why he said, don't do it. Next.
Why did God command that we not cook a young goat in its mother's milk? Exodus 23:19.
That's again the same thing. Actually, this one has been explained. Now we find the explanation for it. The pagan used to believe if they do that and to spread what they cooked this way to the trees and their land, that will help them to have a better crop next year. So every time after the harvest, that's what they did. They cooked a young goat, or they called it kid, into mother's milk, and they spread what they created all over their. Exactly. That was a selfish way. Again, not listening to God, not praying to God, not thanking God for their crops, but doing it that way and believing that they're going to get better crop. And that's what God said, you should not do that. Actually, if you read other parts of the Bible, it clearly says that it's okay to cook, I mean, not to cook, but to eat meat and milk together. There's no problem with that. You know, many places in the Bible, it's nothing to do. Everybody can eat meat and milk together. The whole idea was don't cook the kid in mother's milk and believing by spreading all over the place you can have a better crop next year. Yeah, exactly. That's what God said, don't do it. Trust on me. Don't trust on milk and goat cooked into milk. Okay, next.
Why does the God of the Bible and the Quran sometimes refer to himself as we and us if there is only one God? For example, in Genesis 1:26, God says, "Let us make man in our image."
It's something called the royal we. If you have seen the kings refer to themselves as we also, but there's only one king. When they say, we decided to this thing is going to happen, they don't mean there is more than one king. There's only one king, but we as a royal we decided. So that's why God also referred to himself as we, let us. Therefore it's a royal we, and also if in that case let us make man in our image, it's kind of a decision that he will make, but at the same time is referring to everybody knows that decision is made such a thing to happen. Let us, let us go to the lake. But really you made a decision to go to the lake, and you're informing everybody else, yeah, we're going to go to the lake. Let us. We are going to create the man in our image. How does that have anything to do with the translation, Noor? Go ahead.
I was just thinking that, the King James Bible was compiled together in a time when there were a lot of monarchs. So maybe the royal we was known, very well known, as a very respectful term. So when they were creating the Bible, they translated it in that way to emphasize that. Or maybe in the original Hebrew language, or whatever the original language it was, maybe the best way to explain the word that it was to say it in that way. I don't know, I always wonder about the translations for these little things like this.
Could be. That might have some truth in it. And when they translate it, they probably changed a lot of things in it. So not everything is completely, 100% truth in the Bible too. Bible has been translated more than 27 times. And I started the mission, there was 27, but since then they have a couple of even more translations that they try to bring some of their agenda into it. So, that could be it, but also, kings that use that as something to help them out as well. We gods call himself we, so king calls himself we. That makes sense. Okay. Any follow-up? If not, let's go to next.
Is it okay with God for us to work with mantras such as Om Namah Shivaya, Om Aum Saraswat Nama, and Om Shri Maha Lakshmaya Nama, so long as we realize that God is one?
Do you know what do they mean? Okay, well, I'm wondering why you asked that question. What do they have the meaning of? There is more than one God? Well, after coming this mission and the mantra Hari Om Shri Hang Om Nam Kevalam, which is the greatest in meaning and vibration, using any mantra is bringing the energy to the lower level. So one of the things that I realized very early in my understanding of Hinduism was there is so many gurus and people are between you and God. And therefore, the mantra from Baba Nam Kevalam was changed to Om Nam Kevalam. So the concentration is on the highest level, not on the Guru, not on the Messiah, not on the Revealer or Prophet, not on Shiva or Krishna, none of them, but the highest, which is the formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal. Even if you accept that our mantra is the primary, still using any other mantra will bring your energy down. So the best way is not to use any other mantra whatsoever, but use the highest and understand the meaning of the highest. So no, they are not recommended to be used, but everybody who follow the mission have to recognize and realize the formless and invisible and nameless is the highest. Even my presence and this revelation, along my names and all everything that's been given, that God made it clear this is the revelation from God and the highest, is to glorify God and go to Him, not even get attached to me and make a obstacle of me to go to God. So it is good to respect me, understand that God chose this vessel for this purpose and have the highest adoration for what God did, but at the same time go beyond that. Another mantra that do not specifically mention the name of Guru permissible. I bow to the all-prevailing essence. Why go to something that is not come from the highest level of God chosen? Why do we need anything else? All right. Next.
Why have all the prophets in the greatest sign been men? For example, Noah, Buddha, Abraham, Isa, Muhammad, Bab, Baha'u'llah, Baba, Maitreya. Why no female prophets?
Well, I'm glad you find the mission mantra most powerful. Actually, it is the most powerful mantra in the last 2,000 years. So, as you said, there is a dharma for men and women, and each of them are created for a purpose. It's the division of labor, and the best way, nature to utilize for humanity to progress. Therefore, each of them have to understand the purpose and reason God created them. And also, it's apparently God chooses His prophets from men. And in the final analysis, we are going to go to pure consciousness, and we are being be equal, and there is not such a thing as a prophet and not prophet, or man or the woman or the child or this and that. These are just the human concepts that stop them from following God and His will. And if He chooses men as a prophet, He is God, He can do that. And therefore, we should accept that as His will, and therefore follow what He has chosen to do. So, we can see that's the way God does it. God created woman for a different purpose. He created man for a different purpose. And if we are following God's will, we should accept our situation and position according to God. I hope that makes sense. Go ahead. Let's go to next.
Why has God always been traditionally referred to as Him in the Bible?
Okay, you mean why He's not called Her? I see. Okay, well, God is both. God is everything. He's male and female. And He has been actually God, the nameless, the God invisible. He has been, at least recently, in a new way or new age of thinking, he has been called Her or She. We have called Him, Her, It many times. And in the Bible, probably He's not ever been called She or Her, or but it has been referring to It. And because most of the languages, when they talk about a general idea, they always used to use male as the person they are referring to a general ideas. They never included female. So that is probably why in the Bible followed the same idea. And eventually when the new way came, they start using Her and She also. And this is a new way of thinking. And before that, never anybody objected to anything like that. That's what it is. Okay, I'm glad you like that. Okay, let's go to next.
Question 16. Can you please explain the following passages from the Quran? And I'll post those in just a minute and read them now. Men have authority over women because God has made the one superior to the other. Good women are obedient. As for those whom you fear disobedience, admonish them and send them to beds apart and beat them. Quran, Woman, 434. Does God condone domestic violence by men as a solution to marital problems? If any of your women commit a lewd act, confine them to their houses till death overtakes them, or till God finds another way for them. Quran, Women, 414-16. If you wish to replace one wife with another, do not take her the dowry. Does God condone a double standard here? Women 420. And now I'll post those verses.
Okay, men have authority over women. We find that most of the verses in Quran, it's not using authority, but it's using in charge. Guardian over. So this is not really authority, but being in charge, being guardian, protection, kind of a way of referring to it. And that is not an Islamic idea alone. Actually, if you go to Hinduism, in Hinduism is taught women are under control, are under the charge of the father. He's supposed to take care of them, protect them, and bring them up according to Hindus' philosophy and ways. After they are married, the man is in charge or protects them and guard them. And when the man become old and he leaves to continue his spiritual journey, that's the way of Hindus' philosophy is, when couple become old, they are recommended to depart from each other and man goes to a spiritual path again. And now the son is in charge of the mother. So it's not a Quranic understanding. The whole idea of woman being guarded and protected, it's a cultural thing that till recently, probably 100 years ago, it was even practiced in West, in the West. Okay, in that culture they were guardian over woman. Okay, of course, yeah. Does this have anything to do with the belief in Native American culture that the sky is father and the earth is mother? The father is unmanifested and woman present a manifested world? Could be. Even in American Indian culture, there was a setup of, you know, the woman in that culture also were protected by their men. It's something in, you can find in every culture that something like that is always been presented. And when a society become prosperous and there is a lot of wealth, and the woman now can have wealth, usually it become loosened up. And since they have their own financial freedom and independence, they don't follow that advice. And it's very interesting that if you study the history, you can see this phenomena happens when a society becomes prosperous, and the whole thing, the freedom and the ability of the woman to separate themselves from the authority of the men, and the ability to do whatever they want, is come at the same time with the sexual looseness more in the society and ability to show their body more and more, and coming of the gays and lesbians and all those things, and eventually destruction of that society. So it seems to have a financial base. That's what the Quran even says. You know, they have authority over the woman because the man has the finances and helping them out by money that they have. Maybe that's why God make human poor. Because when they are poor, seems to be that apply more often. So isn't it better that we follow God's way even when we are prosperous than we follow His way when we don't have money and we are not prosperous? So that's why the mission recommends women and men all understand God's way. That seems to be the cultural thing that's been all through history. That doesn't mean the woman can't work, or that doesn't mean they should be, you know, beaten. I have no doubt men have misused this verse and have done bad thing toward a lot of women. That's not acceptable either. But at the same time, it seems protecting women is a part of many cultures, and when there is no protection there, something happens to the culture and men lose control and women are not happy. They want to be attractive, and they make by showing more body when the beauty of woman is more than their body, and therefore they become confused, men become confused, and the whole society falls apart. So it seems God's way is we have to create an environment that the women are protected, they are taken care of, they are loved and cherished and made realize that they are great mothers, and that is their beauty and a strength, and therefore that's why God says that that protection should be there. We'll see. You know, those societies that went away from that, and it happened to every great empire. When they become prosperous, that's one of the things happens, then other things come after that. Now, can we be prosperous at the same time listening to God? Isn't that better than not? So that seems to me that's what it says in that verse about the dowry. It says if you decided to marry another woman or put your woman away, if you have given some money, it's not dowry actually. That's another thing. It's not in Quran. It's not dowry. It says if you have already given some money to her, you can't take it back. You can say, okay, you are with this woman and you give some money to her, and then you decided to marry another woman, you can't take that money back. It's hers. Actually, I think that was not double standard. I think that was great. That's telling him, you know, if you give something to her, you cannot take it back. It is hers, and I thought that is good. I don't know why you took it as that's bad. So that is, we can see that, yes, it is a good thing that if you give something to your previous wives, okay, we personally and the whole mission believes in great communication between couples, and they become great friends and ability to work with each other very closely and be one. You know, it shouldn't be dominating anybody else. But in general, yes, it is a good idea that the society set up a way that the women are protected and they are provided and they're taken care of. That's what God says. That's the way it should be. Living to the fact that men can upgrade their sexual partner to new ones, but women can't. Women get confined to their rooms. Where did you refer that? Well, the only thing we teach is that in order to create more children, yeah, well, that is about the lewdness. Okay, but do you know what lewdness means? Means to show their body, their okay, well, I thought that means only just showing your private parts, but probably what you say is correct too. So it actually says chastise them, and if they didn't listen, then make more and more punishment severe, and if nothing helped, of course, as you said, you know, do that. But of course, the best way, if there is a woman that does that, of course, the man should just let her go. You know, just probably it just doesn't worth it. And that will create a bad environment, bad energy. It's not good for the woman. It's not good for the man. It's not good for the children. And yes, and it says not beat up. Actually, we looked at the many verses in Quran. It doesn't say beat up. It's only one of them said beat up slightly, very, very, not very hard. but it's mostly said scourge or chastise. And if as you say, if it's true, she sleeps around, then he said, you know, don't sleep in the same bed with her, and kind of ignore her, and penguin classic, I see, okay. I thought maybe you are reading some translation. That's one of the things you have to be very careful. There is a kind of a backlash right now toward Muslims, and the translations are a little harsher than it should be. So I probably go more to translations done with the people in the Middle East or somewhere, because people used to come to this room and tell me that Muhammad married he was a pedophile because he married a girl, she was 11, and then after a while became 9, and after a while became 7. And I even heard somebody say 5 years old. And that none of them, of course, was truth. So you have to be very careful what you read in those translations. But in the translation we found, there was none of them really was beaten up, but mostly was chastised or scourged. And of course, if some loose woman you married with, you know, I recommend that just get away from her. You know, just let her go, you know. But if the woman is not loose and is completely dedicated to her husband and children, and she's a great woman, don't let her go. Just hang into her. She is the one that make you feel beautiful and godly, and your children will be godly, and your family will be blessed. So if you don't find such a woman, and the woman you have is loose, I recommend just go get away and find another one that is good and godly. Okay, if there is no other question, let's go to next.
Number 17, can you please describe in scientific or meteorological terms what exactly happened when God rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah, Genesis 19:24?
Okay, can you tell me who told you that it was burning sulfur? The Bible says brimstone and fire. How did you get that? Okay, yeah. Again, we look at the King James Version, old, not even new King James. And they say brimstone and fire. So, it could have been... It's a little far-fetched, but it could have been kind of similar to atomic bomb, that the radiation destroys people, or it completely, if you're close to the central ground zero, your body will become kind of ash, its bones to ash. Of course, Bible says salt. Whatever it was, that's what God said he's going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah, and that's what he did. So in a sense, what it exactly was, that's why I was wondering why you're saying burning sulfur. Because I never heard that before. Just a second. Yeah, well, it's not the technology. I'm not saying exactly it was the atomic bomb, but there is some theory that some kind of a technology was available. Actually, some people say there is a part of Saudi Arabia that it looks like some atomic bomb has been used in that area. It is so devastated, and the remaining looks like such a thing happened to them. Of course, plural, total speculation. That's one of the things I hope Mission one day will have some departments that study these things in a deeper level and hopefully find out exactly what happened. Of course, God also uses what is available in the nature and what he has created it. So it is possible to realize what exactly happened, just like a parting of the Red Sea. It really wasn't Red Sea. There was no Suez Canal there. It was a Reed Sea, that it was a marsh between Egypt and the other side of the Suez Canal, and the water wasn't that deep, and a strong wind easily could have pushed the water away and opened the way for the children of Israel to go through. It is a miracle. I'm not saying it wasn't a miracle, but it's explainable. So what happened in that time in Sodom and Gomorrah, it's something that destroyed the cities, made those who looked at it and did not listen to God's commandments to become like salt or sand or whatever happened to them. And what it was is something we can only speculate what it is, what it was, but we can't know exactly what it was unless we have some way to go and study them and come up with the truth of it. Okay, I hope that answered your question. It's not really, there is no answer for it, because really we can only speculate, not give the answer. But there was something that God used to destroy those people, and he might even use it again, who knows. Go ahead for the next.
Why does God of the Old Testament seem to not have a universal perspective? For example, God says in Exodus 23:22-27, I will be an enemy to your enemies and will oppose those who oppose you, the Amorites, Perizzites, Canaanites. I will wipe them out. You must demolish them and break their sacred stones to pieces. I will send my terror ahead of you and throw into confusion every nation you encounter.
It's not that he's not universal, but he is having a creation that created to choose the elects and those who progress and want to return to God. Those are his chosen ones. And it goes very well with our teaching. We are universal. We like everybody to tomorrow come and say, yes, you are right. Let's forget about our separation and egos and destruction that we are bringing on earth, and wars and injustice and all the things we do to each other. And let's create a just earth and unity and bring God to among ourselves, then we include everyone. But we don't. If they are not elect, if they do not want to listen to God and follow his commandments and return to God, they are different than the elect. They are fallen. Also, we are universal. We know they are a part of the universe, but they have lessons to learn. They have the destruction to go through. They have to hear the call and not answer and be punished or destroyed for going against God's way. Therefore, they are not ready, and they separate themselves from the rest, and therefore they don't become a part of the universal point of the view. That's why God commands those things happen to those people, not that he hates them, but maybe they will received a lesson in this lifetime and prepared them maybe hopefully in the next lifetimes to practice. So incarnate all the ones who had practiced into the Hebrew population. In that time, Hebrew were the chosen people. When the Christ come, yes, chosen people are not a race. Chosen people, according to our teaching, are those who follow eternal divine path. Therefore, it's not the Jews that are chosen anymore. It's not the Christian. It's not Hindus or Buddhists or Muslim. It's those who follow and join this mission and realize that God has sent all of the religions. But each time a prophet comes, those who follow him are the chosen ones. So it changes in different incarnation. Therefore, we have to realize chosen one is not a race, is not a specific group or people. Chosen one are those who follow God's way. So, yes, it is now, that's what we are looking, or we're calling the elects. Elects now are different than then. And therefore, it's not being universal, but God is saying, you are chosen, they are not listening to me, I'm going to do this to them. Not as a hate or not being a part of the universe, but as a lesson for them to learn for the future. I hope that answers your question. Go ahead, next.
Number 19. Did God really command the Jews to go kill men, women, and children of other groups and steal their land and valuables from them? For example, see Joshua chapter 6.
Well, he might have, but at the same time, remember, Bible has been changed. Some of the things that they put in there came from the carnal people or carnal minds that wanted to make Jewish people, you know, superior to other races and Hebrews superior to other races. And so they added those things to the Bible. It might not have come from God. That's why Mishan did not put commentary in every verse in the Quran. And we have to take some of those verses with a grain of salt. But at the same time, no, God can do whatever he wants. And maybe it was necessary at then, that time. And even we believe eventually there's going to be the great destruction that one-third or two-thirds of humanity might be wiped out. It's pretty scary thought, but that's what the revelation and the prediction is. So it is possible, but at the same time, it's not important. The important thing is where we are at when we are going. And Maya, they might have great karmas. That's true. Okay, next.
20. When the children of Israel found a man gathering firewood on the Sabbath, Moses decided to stone him to death at God's command. Numbers 15:32-36. Did Moses do the right thing? Did the punishment fit the crime? And is this proper judgment?
Okay, well, you're asking with the killing of a 3-month infant, you know, that baby. Some kids are born and they die a couple of minutes after. They might have some karma for that period. Maybe it was time for them to come and pay for the karma they have created in previous lifetime. Or maybe not. Or maybe they were killed innocent, and those who killed them innocently, if it wasn't the will of God, they were going to pay for it. So it's not black and white. It's a very rainbow color. Yeah. The next question that I just read, it's the same thing. You know, you have to take that with a grain of salt, and it might be a part of the Bible somebody added to it, but it's possible that, you know, in that time Moses wanted to put an example for the other people, realize that he's serious and he had the ability to do that, so he did that to make other people follow it. Or maybe a priest later on at the time of time that people are becoming more and more away from the Sabbath and are not keeping holy, maybe he added that to the Bible to make them, you know, conform to the commandment of God in a greater degree by putting fear in their hearts. So, again, there is some possibility it is from God and there's some possibility it's not. But the most important is where we are at now. What is the revelation now? Let's concentrate on that. Next.
This is the last question, number 21. If God can raise a prophet in every village, then why didn't he do that instead of telling Muslims and Jews to go kill a lot of people around them to spread God's message? Couldn't God have prevented a great deal of unnecessary suffering by simply sending lots of messengers instead of lots of warriors?
I like that question. That's a very clever question. But God already said he's going to send 7 revelations with the 7 prophets and also send minor prophets. Some people say there are 144,000 of them. And so sending prophet is not, it can do it, but not necessarily he will do it. And he prophesied the prophet come and he send them to them and he create ability for them to spread the message. But those who do not listen to the prophet, they have to go. You know, it's time for humanity to listen to Christ. If they don't, that's what happens. It's time for humanity to listen to Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad. If they don't, that's what happens to them. It's a time for people to listen to this revelation. If they don't, God said there's going to be tribulation and destruction. So it's going to happen to them. That's what God's way is. He prophesies. He sent the Messiah. He sent one person as the messenger of God. And either people listen to him or they don't. It's their choice. But also have God already said what is his choice. That's the way he's going to do. So it's up to you, you know, you want to listen to God or you have your own idea as how should it be done. God said that's the way he's going to do it, therefore that's his way. I hope that answered your question. And all the answers are given. I wish all of you a good year and fantastic understanding of the mission and unity with God. And I'm hoping most of you take these words in heart and study them and come and join the communities of light and create them, and let's bring God's word to the heart of man and let them realize that is his way. His way is our way, and our way is his, and your way should be also his way. Salam everyone. Have a good year. See you guys all next year. Salam.